Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on a profitable servant when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. And you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And now, in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills, and they've given us clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of our many lessons in our Mosaic Law School, which we conduct twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's free, doesn't cost you anything, and you can find out whether this is for you or not. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it? All right, we're talking about this thing of a profitable servant. Now, unemployment in the United States is spiking. It's 600,000 plus per month. And the other day there was a fellow from the Labor Department testifying before Congress, and he said it's only happened 10 times since 1949. 10 times that the unemployment rate has gone up by 500,000 people nationwide in 1 month. So that's pretty significant. That's 500,000 people lose their jobs nationwide in 1 month. Let's just divide that out. 500,000 divided by 50 would be 10,000 people in every state in the union losing their job in 1 month. Well, 500,000 people is a lot of people. You know, it's more people than live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for instance. But nationwide, it's only 10,000 people per state. You know, there's millions of people that live in each and every state, save for a couple of three. So 500,000 people, while it's a lot of people in one sense, in another sense, you know, it's kind of a drop in the bucket. Now, since 1949, they've been keeping these records, and only 10 times. Now, let's just take a look here. That's pretty near 60 years times 12. So that's 60 times 12. That's 720 months. Only 10 times out of 720 months have we seen numbers like that. So out of, you know, pushing 60 years now, 1949 to 2009, we've only seen 10 months out of 720 that's had that kind of numbers. Boy, that's not very many. Now get this. Here's the kicker. The last 4 months, that is November, December, January, and February. That's November of 08, December of 08, January of 09, and February of 09 are 4 months, four out of the 10. So this unemployment thing over here is off to a roaring start. And it's sending chills up and down everybody's spine. Now, it's not for me because, number one, I'm old, but I'm not retired. See, if I was old and retired now, I'd probably be pretty nervous. But I'm still working. Every day I get up and go out and do my thing. So, number one, I haven't retired. And secondly, the difference between me and most people is that I know how to keep my job. And that's what I wanted to tell you here in this third program in the series. Here's how to keep your job. And I'm going to show you here at the end of the program, here's how to go get a job if you lose your job and you want to go get one. I'm going to show you how to do that. And the reason that I think I'm pretty cocky and confident in this regard is because I'm an old-timey employer and I know exactly what I'm looking for. And right now, in this downturn right now, I know what employers are looking for. And there's employers out there that are hiring people. And at the same time that people are being laid off, $500,000 a month, $600,000 a month, there are employers out there that are hiring people for their businesses because their businesses are growing. And what you're not hearing here, and this is because, bad news sells papers. Good news doesn't. So the news media, they're out there telling you the bad news because the bad news is what sells copy. And the good news doesn't sell any copy. So let's see if we can't figure out the solution to our problem here. Now, there's a story in the Bible about an unprofitable servant. I mentioned to you, I said, the Bible, believe it or not, the creator of the universe, and I'm talking about religion now. I'm not talking about Catholics and Protestants and Jews and all these other religious folk out here. I'm just talking about the guy that wrote the scripture, had quite a bit to say about hard money, about employment, about wages, labor. He's not deaf, dumb, and blind. He had quite a bit to say about that. And he gave us a parable over here. It's called the parable of the unprofitable servant. Just three verses. But boy, it tells you quite a bit about the story here. Listen to this. It's in Luke 17, verses 7 through 10. Just 7, 8, 9, 10, four verses here. It's called the parable of the unprofitable servant. Listen to this. It says, "But which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by, when he has come from the field, well, go and sit down and eat? And will not rather the master say to his servant, make ready, wherewith I may sup and gird myself and serve me, until I have eaten and drunken, and afterward you shall eat and drink." Now, does he thank his servant because he did the things that were commanded of him? And he says, "I trow not," T-R-O-W, that's Old English for I think not. In verse 10 is the kicker. He says, "So likewise you, when you shall have done all of those things which are commanded, you say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do." Now, I mentioned this before. Let me mention it again. There's a herd out here. And if you are a member of the herd in boom times when there's a bubble, you'll prosper nicely. You won't have any problem. Now, when the bubble bursts, and now we go into hard times, the herd now is going to be pared down. And that's what this downsizing in employment is all about. And a lot of people, I hear all these hardworking Americans, and look, through no fault of my own, I find myself living in this tent city, or out on the streets, homeless, or. Okay. Now, I want you to bear in mind that while we've got 8% unemployed, we have 92% employed. Now, think about that for a minute. It is true, 8% are unemployed. Actually, the numbers are more like 20% are unemployed or underemployed, and 80% are employed. But I want you to notice the majority of us are working. And what you want to be, you 20% over there, you want to be one of us 80% that's working every day. See? And you're looking for economic security. And right now, economic security would be a job, wouldn't it? You know, with a steady paycheck coming in every Friday. Even if the paycheck is less than you would like, it would be better than nothing. All right. Now, how do we put ourselves into that category? And the answer is relatively easy. You have to be a profitable servant. And a profitable servant, then, has to be somebody that goes above and beyond the call of duty. Above and beyond the call of duty. If you do that which is required, you should call yourself unprofitable. Now, I know that runs against union rules, and I know that it's not the norm, and it violates the rules of seniority and all the rest, but that's what your creator tells you. And so this guy might know something, so let's pay attention here. I want to tell you a couple of stories here as we progress. The reason that employers are employers is because at one time they used to be employees, and an employer is an outstanding employee, and that's why he goes into business for himself. And he understands one basic vital, and that is that the employer isn't the boss, the customer is. It's the customer. And competition is what makes this thing of business go round and round. So I'm an employer, and I have employees, and I expect my employees to make me a profit. So get your pen and paper out here, and I'll tell you what the profitability is. The profitability has to be 150% of what you're being paid. That's to be a profitable servant. You have to make your employer 100% of what you're being paid just to stay in the herd. Now, if you're making less than 100% for your boss, well, then your boss is either very desperate or he's not a very good employer, not a very good businessman. So if your employer is paying you $10 an hour, just to pick a number here, $10 an hour, you've got to be making him $20 an hour, and that's 10 for you and 10 for him. Otherwise, you can't even stay in the herd. Now, there's a second kicker here. It costs your boss approximately 16%. Now, it could cost him more than that because he might have an IRA plan, and he might be contributing to that IRA plan. And you think, wow, I put $5 in my IRA last month, and my boss put in $5. Okay. I got news for you there, Tom. Your boss didn't put in a penny. Not a penny. You put in the whole $10. In fact, I want to tell you something else. Your boss is not paying you any wages at all. You're paying all of your wages and his. You, the laborer, paying them all. Now, I'm an old-timey employer, and I want to tell you how this game is played so it'll play well in Poughkeepsie for you. You see, your boss, when he starts out working for himself by himself. That's where I started in the construction business. And I was working for $3.28 an hour at International Harvester at the top of my trade. Okay, I'm a machinist. Now, I get off of that, and then I go to work for $12 an hour, and I'm working as a contractor, which is a shop rate about one half of the $25 an hour that goes for a plumbing shop in Alameda, California in 1968. 25 bucks an hour was shop time. And so my customers were just tickled to get me to come out and do their work for $12 because it saved them $13 an hour. All right. Now, to make sure that I was more competitive than my fellows, I not only would do the plumbing work, but I would also do the drywall, painting, and tile work. So when you hired a plumber to come out and fix a leak in your shower, he'd come out, bust a hole in the wall, fix the pipe, and walk out the door and leave you with the hole. When George Gordon came out, he'd bust a hole in your wall, fix your pipe, and then he'd fix the hole in the wall and then retile it for you so that you had a completed job, that you didn't have to hire a drywall man to come fix the hole and then hire a tile man to come and put the tile back on. See? All right, so this then is what the competitive factor is, that the plumbing shops and the tile workers and the sheetrockers and the carpenters couldn't compete effectively with little Georgie Gordon. So I carved myself out a little niche business here in the building maintenance business. See, I'm not building new houses. I'm just fixing people's problems. You know, you got a leak, you got to fix it. And so I go fix that leak. All right, now, in doing so, I was making four times as much, you know, roughly four times, three times anyway, as much as I was before. Now, before long, I become very popular. Customers are calling me on the phone, and I have to hire somebody to help me with all this work. Now, I'm not interested in employing people. I'm not in this business now because I want to do good and I want to make sure that I've hired all of the unemployed now. I'm not in the social services business. I'm in the repair business. I'm in the plumbing business, and what I want to do is to make money. And so I hired a mechanic to work for me, and I paid him $5 an hour to start. Later, I gave David $6. So my first employee was David Foster. First guy. Paid him $6 an hour. Paid him half. Okay? Now, I had to pay payroll taxes on him and one thing and another. And he made money, and I made money, and everybody was happy. Everybody's just getting along real good. Pretty soon I had to hire a second and a third. At one time there I had 14 employees. That's 14 workers and 7 service trucks. All right. Now, these are boom times in the 1960s and early 70s. I mean, you know, business is good. The Vietnam War is cooking good and money is cranked out and everything's just honky-dory. Now, as the 70s wore on, though, there was a recession. The American government took us off gold and stopped making payments in gold. We went on to fiat currency. By the end of the 1970s, in that 10-year period, we were in a deep recession. We'd been in and out of recession the whole year of the 70s. And there was contractions, and there was unemployment, and there was high inflation. Inflation hit 20% at one time. Interest rates hit 20%. Inflation hit about 13%, as I recall. Kind of where we're at right now. You know, just about where we're at this moment in time. Only this time it's getting a lot worse. In the 70s, it kind of bottomed out, and we just drug along on the bottom for a long time. Now, let me tell you that I have to pay my employees. I got to pay taxes on them. So in those days, it cost me 16%. So if I'm paying 16% on top of this $6 an hour that I'm paying you, see, I'm not even making an equal amount to you. I'm not making $6 an hour because my shop rate's 12. And that's my competitive edge over my other guys over here, see. Now, as time progresses along, your shop rate goes up. So whatever you do, you take a look at your shop rate. And notice that your boss is paying you something less than half of the shop rate. You know, if your shop rate's $50 an hour today, you're getting paid $17 an hour. The difference between 17 and 25, which is the halfway point, is the payroll taxes that he's paying and health benefits, health insurance, and your matching funds to your IRA and things like that. But you want to understand here, Tom, is that every dollar that comes in the door from my employee over here, that $12 an hour that I'm billing him out at, remember, he's earning every bit of that $12 an hour, every penny. And I'm cutting myself in for selling his time. So an employee is a guy who is unable to sell his time to the consuming public. And the employer is the guy who is the salesman and goes out and sells his time. Now, you're a salesman, Mr. Employee. Everybody is a salesman. The difference is that the employer is selling this time or service to a number of people, 50, 100, or 200 customers, and the employee is selling his time to just one customer called the employer. That's the only difference. You're selling your time. And you need to learn how to be an effective salesman of your time. And what's happened to you, if you're laid off now, is that you were a member of the herd and you were an unprofitable servant. Because if you were profitable, you'd still be there. Still be there. Watch this. I had an old-timey buddy of mine call me the other day and we're chit-chatting on the phone. He said, my son, was working for a plumbing company that had 120 mechanics. And he's the last one there, just him and the owner, and he's working 2 days a week. Well, number one, it would be unusual that I would know somebody who knew the last man standing. That was unusual. But out of 120 mechanics, there had to have been one guy that would be the last guy to go. Who would be the last guy to go? Well, the last guy to go is the most profitable servant of the 120. See, it's a non-union shop. Now, in a union shop, we don't follow productivity as the guide to determining whether or not we keep you or not. We follow seniority. So you can have a guy who's been here for 20 years, who's lazy, comes in late, leaves early, and doesn't know his craft very well, and he's going to be the last guy standing. That's because union rules, that is the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, which follow union rules or union rules follow the Communist planks, that doesn't have anything to do with productivity. It has to do with seniority. So you divorce productivity from the workplace is what you're doing. Now, out in the real world, you know, where all of us have to function, productivity is where it's at. Because, see, you make your money on productivity. It's what you do that gets you paid. That's where reality is at. Now, this guy is the most productive. Out of 120, we now know who the boss thought was the most productive. Now, marrying the boss's daughter doesn't hurt. And taking the boss out for a beer, you know, on Friday night doesn't hurt. I'm not saying that. I mean, you don't have to be necessarily the most productive guy. But the boss is going to keep the people around him, keep them employed, the guys that he likes. And you know, most of you people out there have a bad attitude toward your boss. I mean, you know, you don't like the company you're working for. You don't like the boss. You don't like the product. And you're only coming to work because you have to. Well, that's not a very good formula for keeping your job. A better formula is a guy who's loyal to the boss. You know, you work for Chrysler, and so you drive a Dodge. You know, and instead of driving a Toyota pickup, you're driving a Dodge pickup. So when your boss, you know, sees you drive up, he says, hey, this guy buys my product. And you come to work early, and then you leave late, and you're overworked and underpaid, and you don't complain. And when the boss says you need to take a pay cut, you say, yes, sir, if that'll help the company, that's what I want to do. So you arrive early, you leave late, you're always on time, you're not concerned with seniority, you're interested in production, you're a competent mechanic, you're loyal, you're in business to help the boss compete with all of his competitors, and you are the best man on the job. You're going to be the last guy to leave. That is, if you leave at all. Now, the boss is going to be the last guy to leave. Now, unless he's got his business leveraged out so far that he can't make his payments. Now, that happens. Let's suppose that you're a hell of a good employer. You're number one, and you're doing all of these things. But your boss isn't the world's sharpest marble in the drawer, and so he goes out and he borrows a lot of money. He lives high on the hog. And now business takes a slump, and this is where General Motors is. See, General Motors, they're leveraged out. They can't make their payments. And now their sales have dropped by 53%. I just saw a number the other day. It just fell off a cliff. And now they still got the same payments to make, but they're only making half as many sales. Well, okay, let's try it this way. You know, you're Joe Sixpack and you're out here working for wages. Now, let's suppose that your income is cut in half. Just next week, the boss says, okay, we're not going to pay you $10 an hour, we're going to pay you $5. Does your bank lower your mortgage payment by half? Does the grocery store down there cut the prices of its groceries in half? See where the problem is? Now, you've got a car payment to make, it's $500 a month. And you've got a house payment to make, and that's $1,000 a month. And then you've got some credit card payments to make, and that's another $500 a month. I mean, partner, you got to make $2,000 a month just to make those three payments, car, house, and credit card. Before you buy any groceries or before you take a vacation or go spend money on anything else, you know, there's your three payments. Now you're making $4,000 a month, $1,000 a week. Things are going along fine. All of a sudden, your pay gets cut or your work hours get cut to half, like General Motors. And you're underwater right away. You're just upside down. You can't afford the house. You can't afford the car. You can't afford the credit cards. And so, you know, here you are. All right, that was bad planning on your part. It's bad planning on the boss's part. You're upside down. You're going to get foreclosed on. That's the bad news. Now, here's the good news. I teach a business school, and as soon as I have a student walk in my door, the first thing we talk about in business school is, where are you? Are you underwater, or are you even, or do you have some real assets? And almost invariably, when people come into class, they're underwater. I guess that's why they come to business school. Because, you see, if you're not underwater, I guess you don't need business school, do you? It's the only time that people plan for the future is when the present is untenable. Then all of a sudden, take a look at savings. You know, savings went down to minus. Now it's back up to plus 5%. So as soon as economic hard times come, you know, people start saving. Hell, you should have been saving when the good times. You know, in the bad times is not the time to be saving. The time to be saving was in the good times when the money was flowing in. As old Frank used to tell me, always save half. You know, the always save half story. Let me write that down. Old Frank Roach, I was talking to him one day, and I said, how did you get started in business, Mr. Roach? And he said, well, I saved half of everything I created and produced. And I said, God, how did you do that? And he said, well, and he said, listen to this. He said, if you take a man that's out here, and this is back in the 50s, you know, when $10,000 was a lot of money, and you make $10,000 a year, which, you know, people then were making $3,000 a year. That was the average wage. But if they're making $10,000 a year, they spend all of it. And the guy that makes $5,000 a year, he spends all of it. And the guy that makes $3,000 a year, he spends all of it. Now, if the guy that was making $10,000 a year lived like the guy that's making $5,000, he could save $5,000 a year, couldn't he? And in 10 years, he'd have $50,000. If the guy that's making $5,000 a year would save half, he would live like the guy making $2,500. And then at the end of 10 years, he would have $25,000. If the guy that's making $2,500 a year were to save half, he'd have $1,250 a year that he'd be saving. He'd have $12,500 at the end of 10 years, with which he could go out into the marketplace and start a business and go do something constructive. Always save half. Now, Americans don't do that. Indeed, most people around the world don't, but that's what I do. I just sit here and say, well, I'll always save half. No matter how much money I make, I just cut it in half, and that's how much I have to live on. And I don't have any credit cards, don't have any bank accounts, I don't have any car payments, I don't have any house payments, I don't have any payments, I don't make payments, and if I don't have the money, I don't buy it. All right, and so I always save half. Now, when you save half and you've got some investment capital, now you can go out and you can start your own business, which is what normal people do. You know, they get to a point in life and they say, I don't want to work here anymore. Take this job and shove it. I want to go out and work for myself. Now you're going to go out and sell your services to more than one person. That's all. That's all an employer is. An employee is a guy who sells all of his time to one guy. An employer is a guy that goes out and sells all of his time to more than one guy. And what we need to do is to start selling our time to more than one guy. All right, we're at the halfway point, so let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, remember, are mine, and they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about a profitable servant. Now, a profitable servant is a guy that makes 150% of his base pay for his employer, so that his employer can pay all of his payroll taxes and make the same amount of money that you're making for going out into the marketplace and selling your time. Because that's what my job as your boss, your employer, that's my job in life. It's to keep you employed all the time. And I have to work hard to make sure that you're employed 5 days a week, 40 hours a week, you know, week in and week out. Because I know that if there's 1 week that you're not employed, you'll be looking for another job. So I'm a salesman too. Remember that? Your boss is a salesman, and you're a salesman, and you're selling your services to your boss. And your boss is watching you all the time. I don't know if you employees understand this or not, but let me tell you, your boss is watching your productivity all the time. He can be gone out of town for a week, and he's watching you. Do you know that? Because see, when he comes back at the end of the week, he takes a look at where his inventory was the day he left and where is his inventory when he comes back. Is there more or less? If there's more, he says, hey, the boys have been working. If there's less, he says, hey, these boys weren't working very good this week. Now, direct supervision is a problem that every boss faces because the boss cannot be there standing over you telling you, come here, go there, stand up and sit down 8 hours a day every minute that you're on the job. And so, as an old-timey employer, I want to tell you that I'm watching you and I'm watching your productivity. And that's the way I measure how valuable you are to me. It's how much are you producing. And I'm measuring every employee in the operation. You know, and how much is he producing? So as an employer, and I got 10, 15 people working for me, one guy is the best and produces more than the other 14. And one guy is the poorest, and he's producing less than the other 14. And everybody else is in between. So, if I have any layoffs, then I start out here at the bottom, and I tell Tom and Hank and Pete and Joe that they go first. And then I keep the other 10, see? That's just every employer is doing that, Tate. Just pay attention. And you want to be outside the herd. You want to be number one. If you can't be number one, then you want to be in the top five. Now, being in the top five is good because out of 15, that makes sure that you're going to be in the top five. But when you get down to the last man, if you want to be the last man standing, you got to be the number one producer. That's just where the bottom line is. And if you're disloyal to the boss, or if you don't like the company and you don't like, you're probably not going to make it there. You're probably in the wrong business. You should find a line of work that you like better. All right. Now, my Uncle Lyle, assuming that you don't want to go into business for yourself, you're not ready for that yet, but you want to sell your time and you want to sell your time to just one guy, then you have to have an audience. And most of you people don't know how to put this audience together. So let me tell you how to do that. The audience is normally handled by what we call a resume. And so people are out here, they go to college and they learn how to put resumes together. Resumes are professional lives. It's a history of your work and your work ethics and your productivity on paper, which is exaggerated beyond description. And it probably gives a prospective employer a bad impression of you. And when somebody offers me a resume, and I look at it, and oftentimes I just shake my head and I say, you know, boy, this poor guy doesn't understand which end is up. That's my impression about 99% of the time. So I'm not going to show you how to write a resume because I think a resume from an employer's point of view is just poppycock. And what you're doing here is you're trying to compete in writing style and lying and in exaggeration and do it better than anybody else. Listen, the job that you're going into, unless you're going into the propaganda ministry of the United States government. I mean, if you're going into government service, now, being able to write good resumes is probably an asset because, you know, you need to be a good professional liar. But out in the real marketplace, your boss is probably producing something. If he's a manufacturer, he's producing furniture. Or if you're a mechanic or you're a truck driver or something like that, see, your boss is actually doing something for other people, and he has more somethings to do for other people than he can do himself, and that's why he needs you. He really doesn't need a good writer, a good liar, or a good resume producer. He needs a good truck driver, a good plumber, a good electrician. He needs somebody that can cut boards and cut them off at the right length and put them together. So you need an audience. Let me show you how to do that. My Uncle Lyle taught me this when I was just a young fellow. He needed a job, and he was unemployed, and it was the depths of the Depression, about 1933, 4, 5, long in there. And so he goes down to Pacific Lumber Company. Pacific Lumber Company is a sawmill. It's the world's biggest redwood lumber mill in Scotia, California. And so he goes down there, and when he walked in the gate, he saw a line of about 100 people, he said, lined up at the office to go in and fill out their resumes. And Uncle Lyle said to me, he said, I could see right away that this is not the place to get a job, because there wasn't anybody working there. They were all standing there in line waiting their turn to go in and fill out some paper and tell the boss inside why it was that the boss should hire one of those guys as opposed to the other 99, because they were hiring about two or three people a day. Now, 100 people are lined up for two or three jobs. And my Uncle Lyle said he could see right away that this is not the place to go to get a job, because 97 people today are going to be disappointed. Now, we're here to get a job. We're not here to fill out papers. So he bypassed the line, and he went right straight out into the mill yard. And he saw a guy working, and he said, who is the foreman here? And the guy said, well, it's Ben Johnson over there. So I said, okay. So he goes over to Ben Johnson, and he says, Ben, they just sent me out from the office. I'm a new hire. What do you want me to do? And Ben says, I didn't call for anybody from the office. I don't need anybody out here. And he says, well, they sent me. Here I am. I'm ready to go to work. What do you want me to do? The boss said, well, okay, I'll have to go get to the bottom of this. You see that pile of lumber over there? Now, a pile of lumber, a unit of lumber has about 3,000 board feet in it. And it takes about, you know, half an hour to 45 minutes for the average Joe six-pack when a pile of lumber falls over and it's scattered, and you got to pick it back up. So, all right, so my Uncle Lyle goes over there. Now, if you really hustle, I mean, if you really get after it, you can do it in 30 minutes. And if you really want to hustle and get it done, you could probably do it in about 20 minutes. My Uncle Lyle gets in there, and he hustles. And he restacks that pile of lumber in about 30 minutes. Comes back to the boss. He says, there it is. It's stacked. What's next? And the boss is pretty impressed. He says, hey, that's pretty good. He says, well, take that pile of lumber and restack it on the chocks that it had fallen off of. Uncle Lyle says, aye, aye, Captain. He goes over, restacks it. And every time he stacks this pile of lumber, he's getting better at it. You know, it's the same boards. By the time you've stacked this pile, now, my Uncle Lyle reported to me that he stacked that pile of lumber about 35 times that day. I said, oh, my God. Boy, if that guy would have said to me, stack that pile of lumber 35 times, I'd have told him to take that job and shove it. And my Uncle Lyle said, why? And I said, well, because when you picked the pile of lumber up the first time, it made sense because it had fallen over. When he had you restack it back on the other chocks, that made sense because that's where he wanted the pile of boards. But when he told you to keep stacking the pile of lumber from one pile to the next pile to the next pile to the next pile, and he just kept restacking the pile of lumber back and forth on the same blocks all day long, that doesn't make any sense. And my Uncle Lyle asked me the closing question. He says, what difference does it make to you? You got that? Bob, Tom, Sam, Sally, Jane, come on. What difference does it make to you? You see, the boss is buying 8 hours of your time. In those days, they were buying 12 because you used to work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. But, you know, today the boss is buying 8 hours of your time here in the United States, typically. What the hell difference does it make to you whether you're out here fixing a hole in the wall or you're out here fixing a roof or you're fixing a plumbing leak or you're digging a ditch or, you know, what the hell is it to you? It all pays the same, doesn't it? Now, evidently, the boss, who is buying your time, wants you to restack that lumber 15, 20 times. I don't know how many times he stacked that pile of lumber, but he said he was really getting good at it. He could restack the pile of lumber and then he could repile it in the next pile, and repile it in the next pile, and repile it, and just kept going back and forth. He could do it in about 20 minutes. And the boss was really impressed with my Uncle Lyle, which is exactly what my Uncle Lyle was there. You see, when you're looking for a job, Bob, pay attention here now. This is the closing question. When you're looking for a job, you need an audience. You don't need a resume. You need an audience. Now, an audience is where you actually demonstrate for the customer what it is that you can do. I can stack a pile of boards in 30 minutes. You know, that tells the boss 10 times more than a piece of paper that says, I can stack a pile of boards in 30 minutes. Because if you said, I can stack a pile of boards in 20 minutes, he'd probably think you're lying. But if you went out there and actually stacked the pile of boards in 20 minutes, the boss would say, wow. Wow. How many times can you do that? About 30 times a day. Wow. That's the guy I want to hire. The guy that wants to work. Not the guy that wants to lean on the shovel or pinch the girls on the ass at the water cooler. Listen, boys, pay attention here. Standing at the water cooler pinching the girls on the butt doesn't make the boss any money. I know it's a lot of fun, you're having a good time, and the girls are giggling, but it doesn't make any money. It doesn't put any inventory on the shelves, kids, which is what the purpose for this employment is all about. The purpose for employment is to produce useful, productive, meaningful labor. At the end of the day, how many more widgets are in the warehouse than were at the beginning of the day? That's all. So you need an audience. All right, now let me give you my experience. I've hired myself a job several times. I told you I hired a job at Frank Roach's. You know, a little bit of a modification here. I went and lied to the guy and said, yeah, I'm an experienced milker. It didn't take him 5 minutes to see that I didn't know my hind end from a hot rock. But here's what I demonstrated. I'm a serious player in the game. I'm here to work. I want to learn, and I'm just a punk kid, and I know that, and I know my place. You know, everybody needs to know his place. And so the boss said, well, I'm going to pay you $250 a month. And you're inexperienced? I'll give you $175 a month. Board and room, and then I'll teach you the job. You look like you want to work. Which is number one. Do you want to work, or did you just come here to get a paycheck? See, the government isn't suggesting that you people with the stimulus package actually go out and work and do something intelligent and constructive for the rest of us. Their concern is we need to get dollars into your pocket so you can get out into the marketplace and spend them. Well, that's great, you know. Yeah, give me all the money you can give me so I can go out in the marketplace and spend it, irrespective of any productive, useful, or meaningful work. Huh? Come on. That's going to end up in a bad circumstance. You're not going anywhere doing that. Well, anyway, one time I lost my job at Earl Sherman's, and then I was in a carpool, and we were driving home, and the boys were lamenting how I'd lost my job and one thing and another, and I said, hell, I was looking for a job when I found that one. Now, I'm out in the marketplace. I've got to sell my skills and ability to some new employer. And I said, I've always wanted to work in a shipyard. You know, I was a young man at the time, and I could see those big ships out there being built, and I said, wow. You know, I was a welder, and so I said, yeah, I'd like to go weld on those big ships. I'd like to learn how to do that. So I said, let's go down. We used to go through the Alameda Tube. So I said, go down the Park Street Bridge and drop me off down there at Pacific Coast Engineering, would you? And so Phil drove down to the Park Street Bridge and crossed over and dropped me off at the front gate. And as I got out of the car, I had my hard hat on, had my lunch bucket in my hand. I get out of the car, and there's a guard shack there. See, and there's a uniformed security guard there. Now, how the hell am I going to get by this security guard? So I took off on a dead run. And I'm running through the gate, And you know what the guard said to me? He said, "You better hurry, you're late." Well, that's right. You know, the new shift takes off at 4:30, and here it is, 4:45. I'm 15 minutes late, running through the gate. Guard sees me running, got my lunch bucket in my hand. Does he check me? No. Went right in. And so I needed to get the hell out of the road. So I saw a building. There was a door over there. So I ran through this door. And here I am in Building A. This is a secured building, by the way. You have to have security clearance to get in here. Do I have security clearance? No. Do I work here at Pacific Coast Engineering? No. So I go in and I find the locker room and I stick my lunch bucket up on the shelf, you know, on the top of the lockers. I don't have a locker. And I walked out and I saw this guy working. I said, "Hey, who's the boss here?" And so he said, "Well, the boss is Ben Johnson." I said, "Okay. Well, where's Ben Johnson?" He says, "Well," and he points to the end of this big Building A, and then he says, "He's out there on that ship on the wharf. It's got a hole in it, and they're down there trying to figure out where the hole's at." And so, okay, now it's about 1/4 mile. These buildings in a shipyard are big. It's about 1/4 mile from where I'm standing here down to the wharf, the dock. So there's a piece of iron laying on the floor, so I pick up this piece of iron and I start walking. Now look, if I'm in a shipyard and I got a piece of steel in my hand and I'm walking, I must be working here, right? So I'm walking through the building and I get to the end of it. And so here's the gangplank, and there's two uniformed guards at the gangplank. And so I just walk right up the gangplank with this piece of iron in my hand. They don't even bat an eyeball. You know, I'm just another worker like the other 3,000 guys running around here. It looks like an anthill. A shipyard looks like an anthill. All these people running around, and nobody knows what the hell anybody else is doing. Now, that's not quite true, but, you know, to the average observer. So I walk up on the ship. Now, I'm looking for Ben Johnson. So I said, "Hey, this ship's got a hole in it, and there's a bunch of guys working on it. Where are they?" "Oh, they're down in the bilge." Now, look, I don't know a bilge from a bridge. Although I do now. The bilge is down in the bottom of the boat and the bridge is up on top. And so I had to get directions. You know, show me the direction of the bilge. And he said, "Well, go down that ladder until you get down to the bottom and you'll see those guys down there." So I go down there and there's about, I don't know, 6 or 8 guys. And they got plans laid out here, you know, and they're on this piece of steel table of some kind. And they're all standing around. I could tell that they were bosses because they all had a yellow hat on. See, all the rest of us are wearing a different color hat. So I'm wearing a steel hat, but it's not yellow. And they've all got neckties. You can all tell the engineers right away. They're all in uniform. They're all wearing neckties. See, ship workers don't wear neckties. All right, so now, you can't just barge in here. So I went down there. I put my piece of steel down, and I went down here, and I'm standing here respectfully waiting. And a guy says, "Yeah, is there something I can do for you?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm looking for Ben Johnson." And so the guy who's Ben Johnson says to me, he says, "Okay, well, I'm Ben. What do you need?" I said, "Well, they sent me out to the office here to go to work, and you're not there, so what do you want me to do?" And he says, "Well, what are you?" And I said, "I'm a welder." He says, "Hell, we don't need any welders. We need fitters." And so I said, "Well, I'm a fitter as well, but I thought they wanted a welder." "No, no, we need fitters. Will you work swing?" I said, "Hell, I'll work graveyard swing. I don't care." And he says, I need fitters on swing." I said, "Well, I'm your man. What do you want me to do?" He says, "Hell, I'm tied up. Here's what you do. If you're a new hire, come back tomorrow at 4 o'clock and meet me in my office." I said, "Now that's up in Building A. Your office is up there." "Yep, in Building A, the office. As soon as you come in the door, turn to left and over there next to the locker room." So, okay. I said, "Hey, listen, write that down for me." So he pulls out a little piece of paper and he writes that down. Building A, 4:30, tomorrow. He writes the date on it. Now what have I got? Hell, I've got an invitation to the party. So I took my invitation to the party. I left. Next morning, 8 o'clock, I'm right there at the gate, and I hand the guard at the gate my invitation from Ben Johnson, you know, the boss. And I said, "Hey, I'm a new hire." And he says, "Hey, boy, you can't just walk in here." And they escorted me over to the office. I give them my invitation. They said, "We're not hiring." I said, "I'm a special craft from the Machinists Union. I'm a Heliarc welder, remember? At International Harvester, I learned how to use that Heliarc machine. I'm a special craft." "Oh, a special craft. Well, in that case, then." And so now, 6,000 guys unemployed now in the Boilermakers Union, just been laid off by Todd Shipyard, and I'm walking in here looking for a job at Pacific Coast Engineering as a fitter. Hell, I don't even know what a fitter is. I haven't got a clue as to what a fitter in a shipyard does. Don't need to. I'm just hiring on now. All right, so now, in order to get a job in the shipyard, you have to have security clearance from the Coast Guard, and you got to have a union membership in the Boilermakers Union. So I run down to the Coast Guard and get my clearance, and then I run down to the Boilermakers Union. Boy, were they ticked off. 6,000 guys unemployed from Todd, and this guy walks in and says, "Hey, here's my $100. Give me my ticket. I'm a special craft." See, they hired me on as a special craft, Heliarc. I don't think that shipyard had two pieces of aluminum in the shipyard to weld together. If they did, they were sure as hell hidden to me. I saw them. I don't think they ever had a Heliarc machine there at Pacific Coast Engineering. If they did, it was news to me. But then, hell, nobody else knew it either. All right, so now I show up at 4:30, walk through the gates. In fact, I showed up about 4. I walk through the gates, and here's my invitation. Hell, I've been hired on. I walked in there, and a guy put me right to work, fitting. And now I don't know what a fitter is, so here's the way I handle that. When he put me over here on the job, there was a lead man, and I told the lead man, I said, "You know, I really don't know what the hell's going on here." And I said, "What I need to do is just be your loyal servant. So I'll tell you what, I'll just light your cigarettes and pour your coffee." That's music to everybody's ears. So I start lighting this guy's cigarettes and pouring his coffee and shutting my mouth and doing what I'm told. And little by little, I figured out and learned what a fitter was. In the time that I worked there, when I quit, they told me that I was the best fitter that he'd ever had. Let me tell you, when I started a job, I didn't even know what a hell a fitter was. Now, my Uncle Lyle taught me that little trick. You're 10 times better off, partner, walking in the door and showing the boss what you can do than walking in the door with a lying piece of paper called a resume, telling him what you can do. Telling somebody doesn't cut it. Showing him, that's what cuts it. I showed Frank Rocha I'm a serious player in the game, and I'm here to work. And I showed the guy at Pacific Coast Engineering, I'm here to go to work. That's 90% of the battle right there. Dressed and ready for work. Pick it up and get after it. Because that's what the boss is looking for. A guy that wants to work. Not a guy that wants to stand around the water cooler pinching the girls on the butt. And that's where reality's at. So if you can put those factors together, you can hang on to your job, or you can go get yourself another one. Although I'd recommend my business school, and I'll show you how to go out and make $100,000 in 36 months. Yeah, I'm about out of time here, kids, so I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.